Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Tuesday, the 28th of June. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday. We have a lot to talk about, as we always do. Some days we could think, you know, oh, there's nothing going on. Well, certainly lately we have not had that issue. So we have a lot to talk about, and we will get to it in just moments. We welcome your comments, as always, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, oh, hold on. Let's put a microphone.
This is sort of a Rube Goldberg thing. Just so that if you're at home listening, you'll know. Joe always is very good. He pushes the microphone over so that I can talk into it. But this time on its way over, it hit the coffee.
Can't hit the coffee.
So now there's liquid on the electronic
No,
table
not
that we
really.
Have.
Oh, yeah, maybe a little. Uh-oh, don't tell Stacey Perry Rosenberry, because she is a very tough lady about all this.
Okay, we're good.
just make sure you're grounded.
Yeah. then we go to our good friend Mike Spain, who joins us each and every Tuesday. He is the associate editor of the Times Union in Albany and the Capital Region, and it's a great pleasure to have Mike with us as always.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Corporate attorney Rich Honan is with us from Phillips Lytle LLP. And I just have to say real quick, you know, a lot of some of our listeners will write and they'll say, why do you have that man on the radio? And just I want you to know that in the outside world, people honor Rich for the great work that he does in our community.
And the people in our firm say, why do we have this man in the firm? So it's
No. Last week, the Center for Economic Growth in the Capital Region had their annual technology awards, and they gave their first Lifetime Achievement Award to Rich for all the work he has done advising young technology companies for the last two decades in the capital. I never knew that about you, Rich.
Me neither.
Yes. Yeah, I told you guys, I lead the world in non-billable hours.
We just thought you were an annoying conservative.
Yes.
We didn't know you actually. No.
I try and balance the two.
I was there. The Times Union is one of the sponsors of the annual event, which is terrific, where you see all these new tech companies get awarded for these incredibly innovative kinds of things they're coming up with. All from this region,
yeah.
And Rich got up there and was graciously accepting this very nice award, and it was a nice day.
Well, congratulations.
Oh,
thank you very much for all your great work and for being a part of what we do here as well. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. All right, let's get to what is happening in our world, and we can begin with the Supreme Court's decision on abortion. This was a big one. Of course, we've been talking about the Texas abortion clinics for a long time, and the court ruled yesterday, and I'm waiting for the but they struck down the Texas abortion restrictions that not only apply to Texas but apply to other states as well. It was a groundbreaking decision. Some say the most important decision that the court has made in decades on the issue of abortion, and again striking down those restrictions. Who would like to begin?
Well, I'll jump in at it. The restrictions essentially required that any clinic that provide abortion services would need to have standards that were almost equivalent to a hospital, and any physicians who worked there had to be on the staff of a nearby hospital, and it was very difficult to make that happen. And they said it was for the safety of the women. The opponents of those restrictions, the pro-abortion rights people, said that was essentially designed to shroud a real intent to reduce access to abortion services, and that's all it was. And it looked like the court agreed with them. Essentially, you know, like it or not, the Supreme Court has ruled that abortion is legal in the United States, and the Texas laws were essentially a way for Texas to restrict it, and the amount of abortions and the places that people could receive those services were severely reduced by these restrictions. And it's now going to go the other way. I guess it will allow more of these clinics to reopen and services to be available more widespread across Texas. And as you said, Joe, it's supposed to affect other states who have had similar restrictions. So the court kind of called it for what it was. It wasn't to make it more safe. It was really to restrict services.
And Alan has talked about this many times, but what we saw to be really the crucial vote, of course, was Justice Kennedy.
Yeah, this was a very good decision on a day that they made a very bad decision.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, but it was a good decision, and you are so right, Mike. If it was Rich speaking first, I probably would have been able to fight with him about something. But I so appreciate what you just said, because you were right on the money. There's not much more to be said except that they saw it for the legislation as the fraud it was intended to be. They wanted to deprive women of the right to have abortions, period. And they were going to take perfectly good doctors who had been doing abortions and say, you have to have these additional restrictions, which is going to make it impossible. Catch 22 was, you have to be in a hospital where you get privileges. And if you're going to do abortions, you're not going to get the privileges.
And there was geography in here too. You had to be a nearby hospital, yeah, and right. it was quite convoluted.
Rich? Yeah, it would have forced women to drive. At least what they said, it would have forced women seeking that type of care to drive hundreds of miles
to fly. And once
right.
again, that means if you have money,
economically, yeah. right. And it seems like I didn't think it was as close a call. I thought it was an easy call for the court. I thought it was pretty consistent with their past decisions. I think the only legal departure or the only legal door that they opened, which has nothing to do with abortion, I think they were clearly correct on the issue, is this idea of the court now being more open to questioning the acts of legislatures. You know, there's a huge presumption in favor of the act of a duly appointed legislature. And here the court really took apart the analysis or the proffered analysis of the legislature and, making inroads, which I think is appropriate, making inroads on the presumption of legislative acts, particularly when they appear to be pretextual, as they were here.
Well, they've done that before on voting rights.
Yep.
In the past. They've said that state laws have been intended to restrict access to the polls, and they have struck those down. But more recently, they backed off and kind of given states more flexibility on those.
Yeah,
so this is an interesting twist. You're right.
Yeah, but Rich is right. But I had a question for you, Rich. You just said when the legislature, I don't know if it was a slip of the tongue or utterly brilliant, you said a duly appointed legislature,
yep,
as opposed to elected legislature.
good point.
If you're the boss,
it was
of the,
one of
the,
it was brilliant. That
yeah,
was what
yeah,
it
well,
was.
Well, it's brilliant if you're taking a look, for example, as the boss of the Bronx. We have Speaker
right, exactly.
Hasty, okay, man, you're going to run for. We're going to put you in the legislature there.
The legal test is a duly elected legislature.
Yeah.
Oh well.
But you will see the court continue to question the act of legislatures, particularly where the act has to do with some fundamental right.
Well, yes and no. I mean, for example, the court has never been good about the gerrymandering that goes on, and they have said the only place gerrymandering is really constitutionally unacceptable is when they do it for purposes of depriving minorities of their rights.
Right. That's what I said, though. I mean, when it burdens a fundamental right, then the court is more willing to look into it.
But the great Felix Frankfurter, which fewer and fewer of us remember, said in that case, the original case on gerrymandering, the court should stay out of the political thicket. I've always loved that one.
Right, and to the extent that it's political, I think the court is less interested when it crosses the line from political to racial, to discriminatory, yeah, as in the case of gerrymandering. Then I think you're going to see the court be more incisive in their analysis of the proffered explanations of the legislature.
Yeah, and one just wonders what the absence of that ninth vote meant in a decision like this. In other words, they get together, they talk it out, they take texts and they send them to each other, and they send their clerks back and forth. So you can't really when you're talking about Kennedy Jogue, you're exactly right. He's been the swinger, all right. But one wonders if...
swing vote.
I got it when I said it. Right. But if Scalia was there, you wonder about what the difference might have been.
I do. To that point, had there been a new member of the Supreme Court, it might not have been you hate a 4-3 decision, or in this case, a 5-3 decision. You like to see... 6-4, and it could have been a 6-4 decision. 6-4?
6-3.
6-3 decision, yes. My math is way off.
You're thinking back to Franklin Roosevelt packing the court.
You like to see greater than a split decision. You like to see a stronger minority. Yes, we're going back to FDR, right? I'm channeling FDR.
There's been a lot of sort of back-channel discussion as to if Hillary gets to be president of the United States, will she appoint Garland? Or will, in fact, she appoint somebody, quote, far more liberal? Now, here is where I worry about Hillary a little bit, which is that, in my mind, if she were smart, she would take the Obama appointment. And if she gets to be president and they haven't moved, which maybe they will, then I would certainly say that he's the one to go to get the nomination. But you never know with her. Sometimes she makes massive mistakes.
And it would be at the beginning of the administration.
Yes.
It may be at the beginning, or if she feels like she's a political creature, as they all are. And I think if she feels she needs the extra to cement her ties with Obama, you may see her talking up the Garland nomination during the campaign. To show that I'm synchronous with his way of thinking. Obviously, she can't come out and say things, but she might say that was a strong candidate that would merit significant review or something, and just to tie her more to Obama if she sees herself slipping in the polls.
Well, Rich, she makes a lot of mistakes, and one of the mistakes.
Yeah, but she's running against a guy who makes more mistakes than she
does. that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. But here she is, and on a television show, and asked about whether she's going to appoint the best U.S. attorney that we have ever had, Preet Bharara, and she turns around and says, "It's too early to tell." I mean, what could she have possibly been thinking?
Her wording wasn't that careful.
How very stupid.
Almost as if she's saying, "I'd like to see more of what he does and doesn't do before I make my decision."
Yeah, let's see how he completes his New York investigation.
I don't know if she meant it that way, but a lot of people may believe that.
Okay, so on that, meanwhile, another Supreme Court action. The Supreme Court unanimously overturned former Virginia Governor Robert McDonald's public corruption conviction Monday and imposed higher standards for federal prosecutors who charge public officials with wrongdoing. Chief Justice John Roberts described the former governor's actions as tawdry, but agreed that instructions to the jury in his case about what constitutes official acts were so broad they could cover almost any action a public official takes. I will turn this over briefly to Mike Spain to give us how this affects us here in New York.
Well, we all immediately look at the two prominent cases in federal court in the Southern District of New York, and that was of last year's convictions of both Dean Skelos, who was the state Senate Majority Leader.
For
corruption.
But what kind of corruption? This is pretty interesting.
Right. He essentially was convicted of using his influence to get a job for his son.
Correct.
And to benefit a company and provide government access for a company.
Well, and a government contract.
Right.
Right.
That's the crucial difference that
you see in the Virginia case.
Right. And then Shelley Silver, who was the Assembly Speaker for quite a long time and a very powerful politician, was also convicted of steering business to his private law firm and also collecting fees for other work that was steered to another law firm.
But there they had a specific quid pro quo, right? In other words, the doctor, he says to the doctor, "Doctor, send me your patients to come to me as a lawyer and I'll get you a grant." That's pretty governmental.
Right. In the McDonald case involving the former governor of Virginia, he was the recipient of all kinds of gifts, access to cars, and his wife got gowns and he got Rolex watches. but they weren't. There wasn't any official action that he took other than to put people together so that they could coordinate and maybe make have a discussion that.
So all eight of these political creatures on the Supreme Court,
right.
They are political creatures.
Sure. Yeah.
So, uh-oh. You know, who doesn't do that in government? Say, somebody comes in, can you help me out? Can you help me out? Can you help me out?
And you make a phone call.
A lot of people do it. And that's it. But it turns out, though, that McDonald probably will avoid going to the federal, prison farm.
Penitentiary.
What, had he done any time?
Don't you understand?
No, he was on appeal.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah. McDonald had a farm.
That's the one.
Sorry,
yeah.
I missed that.
that one went right over our heads.
Yeah, that was over our heads.
Yeah.
Right.
Very clever.
Anyways. But in the cases of New York, Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney whose office convicted both, Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos, he put out a statement, said that they believe that their convictions are solid and that they fell well within the parameters of what the Supreme Court yesterday said constitutes an official act, and they're confident it will survive this appeal. But nonetheless, they were out on bail awaiting this court decision before they need to, go
predictions.
To prison.
Predictions, gentlemen.
Predictions?
Oh, well, Silver's done.
Very difficult.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, Skelos, yeah. I still think you have enough of a quid pro quo in that you give my son a job, you get a contract, right? I mean, arguably. And I don't know what the underlying, what was actually demonstrated.
Well, the brilliance of the Silver situation is, and I've known Shelley for a long time. I just want everybody to know that. But the brilliance of is that they had a specific conversation with the doctor. And I wondered in the beginning, with all the deals that Shelley has made in his career, why the schnook doctor was going to be the one, who became the main part of the case, because there was the quid pro quo, and right. It was spoken and done,
which you didn't have in the Virginia case, right? I mean, right. One of the ways you always whenever you're defending a public bribery case, usually you hope that you're defending it kind of internally. Before, whether it's to the U.S. attorney or whatever, the big defense is always, it didn't work. Like, they tried to, my guy couldn't deliver the contract.
Or,
my guy couldn't deliver the quid pro quo.
Or they're all doing it now.
Yeah. Well, I'm sympathetic to the, running out of time, but you should be able to call your congressman and get help to a government office where you can talk to them about your business. And that's not corrupt if you have a conversation.
I say it's morally corrupt, maybe not legal.
All right. We're going to take a break. We will be back and discuss other issues. We have many of them to discuss. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan will be sifting through those, and we'll go through those next. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain and Rich Honan, we're all ready to go.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on to other topics.
So Jim says the High Court opinion does not preclude the states from enacting public corruption laws or ethics reform regulations. But like Alan, I'm not holding my breath waiting for New York to do anything meaningful. It only changes the probability of conviction under current federal law.
Yeah, there's nothing that stops the state from making it illegal.
Well, and I was going to say, I think, and I'm not an expert on this, but I think under what what the Virginia governor did would have been per se illegal under New York law, right? In terms of, you're not allowed to take anything of value, right? So the wife got $20,000 worth of clothes or something from somebody who was trying to do business with the state? Wouldn't that
right? You can get up to $50 or something. Like that. Yeah.
So I think that would have been
we
illegal.
We all sat around.
Unless it was a pre-existing relationship.
We all sat around and held our breath.
That's true. Yeah.
We all sat around and held our breath waiting for the New York State Legislature to make meaningful changes in our ethics laws, and they did nothing.
That's true.
But we don't have DAs stepping up, state or county district attorneys, either out of Manhattan County or out of Albany County, stepping up to prosecute these
for
cases.
Good reason, yeah. Let me tell you.
Right. Resources.
It's not only resources, although I have to say one of my favorite people in the world is David Soares here in Albany, and he has been deprived of staff by the state on purpose, accidentally on purpose, so that he can't have the resources he needs to do this work. But listen, they got to work with these people. They're all political. The feds are the ones who are doing it. I wrote that in a column. I'm not going to tell you who the DA was, but I heard from a DA who took great exception to this and said, oh, no, I prosecuted this one and this one and this one. Let me tell you, it is a principle of criminal justice in the United States that local DAs do not mess with cops if they can avoid it.
I agree.
It appears so.
More letters?
Oh, more letters. Thank you, Joe. I'm so glad.
That's all right.
He was basking in the glow of the unanimous agreement.
No, I was basking in the glow of my own voice. Michael said, new Benghazi committee hearings. Republican committee has now found no new evidence of Clinton's fault in the Benghazi matter. Sorry, Rich. Were you listening?
I thought that what they found was that she specifically had a meeting the night of it that had nothing to do with getting additional support to the people in Benghazi and had everything to do with the political cover-up.
Listen, Rich, they try their best.
Is that yes or no? Is that what the report allegedly
says? The Benghazi
report
said that she should have realized the risks.
You know, shoulda, shmoulda. Because the fact of the matter is we are all faced with decisions every year, every day, that can go wrong. And then everybody can point their finger and say, well, you should have known. You should have known somebody could throw the rock through the window, all that.
You should have known. You maybe should have known that on the 10th anniversary of September 11th, when there was unrest going on in every one of the Arab Spring countries, that when the ambassador asked for more security, you shouldn't deny it because it wasn't in proper procedural form. That's one of the things found in the report.
It doesn't mean that I don't admire you. You're just wrong. And you know, you can take any, Rich, you can take any situation and say people should have known, they should have been doing it. If it wasn't Benghazi, it could have been anywhere else in the world. It could have been anything else. Look, the American people are not buying this one. And I'll tell you what else they're not buying. They're not buying Vince Foster. And now he's being resuscitated, with Hillary. They're going to do anything in their power to muddy her and say it over and over and over. As the great Pete Seeger said, the height of pedagogy is repetition, and it is.
So the 800-page report on Benghazi came out this morning. This just went over, was just released in the New York Times, ending one of the longest, costliest, and most bitterly partisan congressional investigations in history. The House Select Committee on Benghazi issued its final report Tuesday, finding no new evidence of culpability or wrongdoing by Hillary Clinton in the 2012 attacks in Libya that left four.
And let me guess, what newspaper are you reading from?
Well, it doesn't matter, Rich.
Yes, of course it matters. Because if you read this in the Wall Street Journal, they're going to say new bombshell evidence was found out of this meeting.
Okay, I don't know that that's true, but I do know that the Republican Congress, the House of Representatives, is heavily and partisanly Republican.
Sure.
And that's a Republican.
This was a witch hunt. There's no question about it. And they found, I think, ample, criticisms of Hillary Clinton's actions. And we can look back and criticize a lot of decisions that have been made. But it did not find the smoking gun that they were looking for, but it was fiercely partisan. You know, after the 9/11 Commission was not fiercely partisan. It was bipartisan. And this needed to be bipartisan to have any weight, and it wasn't.
But it was also stonewalled at every turn. Yeah. And every time there's a new report that comes out and people say, we've investigated this to death, and every time there's some new fact that comes out, even at this late date.
Well, you just heard what Joe just read. What's the matter? You have cotton in your ears?
From the Democratic National Committee newspaper, the New York Times.
Will you stop? Okay.
Okay. By the way, I went to the Wall Street Journal to find it. A, they don't have the updated story because to them, the report hasn't been released yet.
Right.
And their story on this says that House Democrats attack forthcoming GOP written Benghazi report. And that was as of yesterday.
Well, they don't
have the new story about
And I haven't read the report. And by tomorrow, I will have read at least the salient parts of the report.
Well, good. Will you be on tomorrow?
Yes.
I never know. It's always day to day.
Oh, stop. You're on tomorrow.
And James writes, Republican, listen to his headline here. Republican Benghazi report. The lead Republican releasing the Benghazi report today, Congressman Gowdy, also known as Lurch of the Adams family, has been conducting a witch hunt against Clinton as is not to be trusted. Okay.
I'm struck by the Lurch image. I'm trying to put that one together. I think I agree with that.
I don't think I know Lurch.
Lurch from the Adams family?
And then there's one here I don't understand at all. Maybe you do, and maybe I'll get into trouble for reading it. Dan writes, 13 hours, exclamation point. Mm-hmm. Watch the movie, Alan. Dan, what movie?
It's
the
a movie about Benghazi.
That was 13 hours. The other thing, if you want to read the opposing viewpoint, is there's the Tom Clancy novel that came out afterwards, where they kind of recreated a situation in which a small group of people was an embassy or a mission was being overrun, and they talk about the different things that could have been done, you know, flying planes overhead and bring it's interesting. But,
and
yeah.
Kevin writes, one of the 20 Kevin O'Connors that we have in the Albany area,
okay.
Writes, Benghazi, the same shoulda would apply to 9/11 and the Bush response.
I agree that the same should have. I don't know about the Bush response, but certainly the same
should have known.
The same.
We absolutely
we should have known that when people from whatever countries are coming in and they're taking lessons on how to fly a plane but not how to land, and they're all on various lists. Yes, he's absolutely right. Those dots should have been connected.
Well,
they absolutely should have.
My point exactly that anything could happen, and, you know, there'll always be a shoulda person, a shoulda shmoulda person. What's so funny?
So all my alerts are coming in. So the New York Times alert is a 2-year panel on Benghazi. This is the headline from the New York Times. 2-year panel on Benghazi ends, finding no new fault by Clinton. Meanwhile, the Fox News alert.
Tell me.
House committee investigating the deadly Benghazi attack blames Obama administration's rusty bureaucratic process for failing to properly respond as American diplomatic staff came under terrorist attack.
Okay, so we know where they're going. We know why they're going there. Stacy just said, how many people died in the Benghazi incident? How many Americans died in the invasion of Iraq? Should we blame Bush for all those deaths and hold hearings on them? The hypocrisy is killing me. The answer to your question, Stacey, is yes, we should.
We should.
Yeah. And you want me to keep reading?
Okay. One more, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go to other stuff.
Okay. And this is from Joseph, who says, House Benghazi panel finds no new evidence of wrongdoing by Hillary Clinton, despite $7 million spent by the House and no wrongdoing found. Hillary haters will persist because they don't need evidence.
You can't stonewall an investigation and then tell me that the investigation took too long.
$7 million from these parsimonious, stingy,
right before the election. They kept saying, now's not the time, now's not the time, now's not the time. Then after the election, they said, well, we've already talked about this.
Where's that And where does that $7 million come from? Is it just a piece of chump change?
I know. She'd have to work,
for
2 days to make $7 million.
Now is the time for a break, I say. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Fulton County Tourism. 44 lakes, 44 choices in the Southern Adirondack Park. Camp, boat, hike, and fish. June calendar at 44lakes.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment. EYEDENTITY eyewearalbany.com. Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival in Garrison, New York, presenting As You Like It, Measure for Measure, an all-female Macbeth, and more, through September 5th, hvshakespeare.org. And Thousand Island Villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, and on Main Street in Northampton, offering fairly traded gifts, home decor, and jewelry from around the world, 10,000villages.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A couple more issues we want to get to before we go to before we end our time together this morning during the panel. Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren teamed up yesterday to take aim at Trump. They were in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is an important state for those of you who follow such things. So in Cincinnati, the first ever event that featured the two Democrats together, and it certainly seemed that she has a very, very good surrogate in Elizabeth Warren.
I've been saying all along, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to have two women on the ticket, and I still believe that. However, Warren is immensely helpful to Hillary because Warren solidifies brings the Bernieites screaming, kicking over to Hillary. What it is.
And why would you? It seems if you have her in such an effective role as a surrogate and helping you and being on the campaign, that you wouldn't necessarily. Right? Need her as a vice president?
No, you're right. You're right. And I'm thinking of inappropriate analogies here.
Let's move away from the inappropriate analogies. But, I mean, in a way, you can understand if Hillary decides, push all the chips to the middle of the table and say, going all in on this. Yes, Warren might be more popular than me, but I'll worry about that after I'm president.
You know who you remind me of? You remind me of Brer Rabbit. Please don't throw me in the briar patch. That's what you want,
I'm so glad we moved away from the inappropriate analogy.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's an appropriate analogy.
Did you see much of her the talk yesterday, Joe?
Yes.
Where Elizabeth Warren was up with Hillary on the stage. It was remarkable. I thought she was very effective, although I thought it could backfire on Warren when she got into the name calling, That didn't look good.
But did it? Yes, I agree. But also, was it that she can say the things that Hillary can't say?
She's the traditional surrogate,
right.
who does the
and
dirty.
And that's
work.
What I was saying earlier about the whole vice presidential. I mean, you have somebody who's going to go out there who can be an attack dog and say, okay, great.
Unlike the rest of you, I live in Massachusetts and I voted for the senator. And I can tell you right now.
You have us there.
Yes, and you don't have the same creds, I do.
Geographic creds, yes.
Because she's...
I bought her book.
I'm invested in her.
All right. So obviously we'll watch that and see. When do you think the decisions will come? When do you think we're going to start hearing? I mean, the conventions are less.
Sometimes
a few weeks
they
away.
wait till the convention itself.
There's a lot of buzz, 2 or 3 weeks away.
Yeah, it has more buzz when you.
Yeah, and it's the only thing that works because otherwise these are very boring conventions.
These will be pretty fun.
How so?
Don't you think? Especially
the Republican.
The Republican
one.
The
Trumpster.
The protest.
He's going to be micromanaged.
The Trumpster. Is that what we're calling him now?
He's going to put on a big show. He said a very good show.
He's going to be micromanaging every moment of it.
I'm talking more about the protests outside. How violent it's going to get.
I remember Miami. What's that? God, it is. And
1972?
Yeah.
I was thinking more of Chicago.
72.
And I was 68.
Wasn't it Daley who said that the police aren't there to make disorder? The police are there to preserve disorder? Remember he misspoke?
Very Freudian. Yeah,
well, to answer the question about Veeps, it does. All the stories are saying that Elizabeth Warren is being vetted by Hillary's team that goes through possible vice presidential candidates. I think that's window dressing. I don't think she's a realistic running mate, and I don't really think she's in the running. I think she's more effective as this loose cannon surrogate who can go out and raise up the Bernieites. Exactly.
And in the Senate, in the Senate, no matter who wins in November, two very important senators. I don't agree with either of them, but two very important power-wielding senators are going to be Elizabeth Warren on one side and Ted Cruz on the other.
Yeah.
The people in power might decide on the Warren side, she's more effective. They need her more in the Senate, whether they win or lose.
And by the way, there's been a leak on that Hillary is allegedly, what we're reading, very concerned about taking senators for the vice presidency in which a Republican governor would appoint a Republican and change the. And I would think it would be untypically correct of her not to think that way.
So Tim Kaine may also be negatively hit by that.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think that's fair to go into the that's a fair consideration for both sides. I mean, Trump doesn't care, but that's a fair consideration.
Okay, Margie says, and I knew I'd get this letter. Warren, explain why two women on the ticket is less acceptable than two men. Please, Margie and Olive Bridge. I'm not going to explain that to you. I just think
I don't think it has I don't know. To me, it has little to do with the gender.
No, no. The question is, it's left and lefter.
Northeast liberals.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't help in the geography at all.
Right.
Again, because you have the Northeast, New England.
Plus, didn't Bernie say he would probably vote for Hillary anyway?
Yeah,
he said
did.
He was going to vote for
he
her.
Said he said
oh,
would
I thought.
Vote for
I,
her.
Okay, the no, quote I saw was that he said he'd vote for Hillary Clinton.
Who are you going to vote for? Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he can bring his Bernieites over to the other side. And that's why, you know, you don't want them voting for Jill Stein if you're the Democrats. I don't think the Democrats have as big a problem as Republicans have.
Oh,
I think that
you're absolutely correct.
It's going to get a lot of votes.
I think the Republicans are in much disarray.
Yeah. What else you got, Joe?
I'm sorry. I was reading a letter about Rich and.
Oh, really?
And can you repeat that letter?
No, I'm good. We're good. do you want to talk about Brexit or do you want to talk about Volkswagen?
Brexit's over. The market's recovered. We're all done.
That's not true.
Well, we're up 100.
Bit of an oversimplification.
Look, a lot of the people who are listening, like me, you know, maybe a little bit older, maybe facing retirement, the rest of this thing. So when the market falls 1,000 points or 800 points or whatever it is, it's a deep concern to us. Two of the brightest people I know, both lawyers, have recently told me that they took they took their money out. They made their money into cash as opposed to stocks during that time.
May I ask a diagnostic question of not who it is, but are they older or younger?
Older. No. Okay. Well, no, that's not true. One of them is my age, older.
Okay.
And one of them is sitting right here with us.
Oh, okay.
So
well, we don't
still,
want to say
so
who
still
that
somewhat
is.
Older.
Now, I'm not a member of the bar.
Okay. We should note that as of 9:52 this morning, the Dow was up 205 points.
There you go. Crisis over.
And by the way, that was correctly predicted by both you, Johnson, and by Rich. But I know you didn't want to read the letter about Rich, but I want to read it simply because I'm offended. I'm offended by it. I am. It's not having a right-wing voice on the show, which is objectionable. It's your choice of person. Will you stop that?
No, that's,
you
know, that's fair.
No,
right?
It's not.
No, it's
fair.
Not. No, because they call
fair.
You smug.
It's always the same
smug.
Thing.
Okay. I find you many things. I don't find you smug.
I would like you to get rid of Herb London. He's not really a conservative. Oh, really, lady?
He ran
on the conservative ticket statewide. He was the head of one of the most powerful conservative groups in the country, if not the world, and you're telling me get a real conservative? Please don't do that.
I got to tell you, I've been called pretty much every bad thing I can think of. That might be the first time I've been called smug.
Yeah.
That's a first.
I don't find you smug.
That's not a bad thing.
Well,
start
maybe a little. No, he's not.
All right. So I wanted to talk about since we started to go down the Brexit route. So, of course, the update here is that now Europe is saying, okay, get out. they're upping the ante and saying they're wanting to accelerate the departure of the British. Britain on Monday accelerated its possible date with destiny outside the European Union, bringing forward the selection of its new prime minister by a month in a move that may help somewhat assuage European demands for a more rapid withdrawal.
I thought that was kind of I think Cameron, in my opinion, a little bit passed the buck there. I thought he should have, in a John Boehner analogy, he should have, like, his last official act should have been to bite the bullet and then just leave the clean table. You know, remember how Boehner agreed to the budget and then brought Ryan in. I kind of think Cameron should have said, all right, this happened under my watch. Let's negotiate, you know, the exit. Obviously, leave it open to renegotiation because not everything's going to be done. And then just leave the table open for the new guy.
I want to know.
Woman.
And here's what I really want to know. I want to know what the game within the game is. I want to know how many of the people who thought that the exit was wrong really wanted it. In other words,
as a protest, thinking it wouldn't pass.
No. I'm thinking about the politicians who objected so strenuously. but that who really did believe in the British identity
I agree. I think they're in a great – they could say, hey, you know, the people have spoken. I wouldn't have gone that way, but that's the way they went. We got to make the best of it. Now let's now renegotiate
now,
everything.
Now,
of course, if they lose Scotland and if they're just one little tiny, you know, just sitting there without the major components when they had gone through this entire fight to keep Scotland – you know, in the last such election, and the Scots voted for it to stay, but only marginally.
Right.
I think they could have some real, real problems.
Well, there is a growing movement of people who are remorseful about their decision to vote for the separation.
Yes, sir.
Who are saying they had not realized all the repercussions of
it. Let's have a do-over.
Yeah.
And they want a do-over. I don't know if it's getting any traction,
It's getting some petition signatures, but Cameron, I think, has pretty much shut that one down, right? Mm-hmm. He said that's not – I mean, that would be the road to anarchy, I think.
As they say in the House of Commons, I refer you to my answer in question
to
be there. Because that would prove to me – that some of those guys really are ready to have this happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think look, now the markets are coming back. There's going to be some upsetness. I mean, we basically in the United States equity markets, we basically just gave back what we had, people bet that they were going to stay.
You had 400 points going in thinking that it was going to stay.
We were 400 up. We went 500 down. You know, it's pretty much
today
a wash.
Up 200. And somebody is going to make money.
Well, it is, because now what's going to happen, I know we're out of time, but what now everybody is looking at is, okay, so now the central banks have to step in. And when the central banks step in, what does that mean? It means more quantitative easing. It means lower interest rates, might even mean more negative interest rates and more liquidity. And so every time they start printing up money, you know, the financial markets like that.
We are out of time. My thanks to Alan and to Mike and Rich. Thank you very much for being a part of the hour this morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. The roundtable continues after this.